From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. People seem to ask Utah reporter Rod Decker about his TV persona all the time, because it's distinctive. He's not really shouting at you, but the way he does a stand-up is more abrupt than a lot of the TV guys, so you take notice. It's direct, which is refreshing. The writing is as straightforward and simple as it gets. No $20 words for Decker, nickels and dimes mostly. But when you're watching him, you get it, which is really all he's going for. He's trying to explain why this thing or that thing might be important and worth paying attention to. Decker once explained it by saying, "I like pointing and touching." Well, Rod Decker has just retired after 37 years at Channel 2. He's joining us today to talk about his work, of course, and his life. Chess may come up, church, Vietnam, politics. You never know. Join us after the news.
Support for this Radio West podcast comes from Salt Lake County Animal Services, a no-kill municipal shelter specializing in pet adoptions, licensing, humane education, and more. Located at 511 West, 3900 South in Salt Lake City. More information is at AdoptUtahPets.com.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For those of us who have lived here in Utah for any amount of time, it's going to be weird not having Rod Decker on the television. You've probably heard by now, Decker retired last week after 37 years from the news department at KUTV Channel 2. Decker is something of an enigma for his ability to cut to the chase, as Tim Fitzpatrick of the Salt Lake Tribune put it, for his ability to frame stories about Utah politics in the simplest terms possible without oversimplifying, for his gifts at remembering things, stories and names from the past, not to mention, apparently, lines and lines of poetry. Rod Decker is with us today. He reported on Utah politics, has written a novel. He's the author of a forthcoming book called Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room. He's joining us here in the studio. And welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I asked you this off the air, but I'll ask you again. How does it feel to be retired? You said you're officially retired like 2 hours or something.
Well, effectively retired.
Yeah.
I retired last Thursday, but Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I would have been off anyway. So I've actually been retired since I woke up. I would have been into work about 10 o'clock this morning, so I've been retired about an hour.
Yeah. So you know sense of what it's like now.
That's right. I'm worried.
Are you worried?
I'm worried that I'm a man of little character, and I require structure.
Yeah.
And I fear that without the structure, I shall become a vegetable.
I've heard you say that a few times, a man of little character, and I thought, oh, he's being funny. But do you mean it? Like you're a man of little character?
Yeah. I spent my youth drinking beer and hanging out and wanting to do stuff, wanting to write things, but not able to make myself do it.
Yeah. And you regret it?
No, not especially.
You're just aware of it.
If I were a perfect person, I would have had more self-control when I was young. But it didn't do me any permanent damage.
Yeah.
I ended up, had I written, what I wrote would now be forgotten. Had I, it's the same, and I can write now. And I had a good family and didn't go to jail. So it turned out that a misspent youth in my case hadn't had little lasting consequences.
But what do you mean that what I would have written would have been forgotten? You didn't think much of your abilities as a writer? What do you mean? Couldn't you have written a great book?
Well,
then?
No. Have to be good to write a great book. I'm middling.
Yeah.
I would have written a middling book.
Got
and
it.
A middling. I wrote a novel,
yeah.
A middling book, and it's forgotten.
Yeah. So I didn't realize you were born in New York.
Yeah.
Lived there until you were 8.
Yeah.
Did it have any influence on you, living in New York?
I had a New York accent
you did.
When I moved to Utah.
Hmm.
The change for a few years was difficult. It may have set me back socially a little bit.
Yeah.
But Not much. My parents were Utahns. Yeah. They're Utah Mormons who went to New York and went to school and worked there for a while. Then came back when their kids when I was eight, thinking that they would raise me a Mormon, which they did, but without success.
Right. Up until 18. I want to come back to that, actually, because that's to me, I'm interested in what happened at 18 and your relationship with Mormonism. But let me ask you before then, when you're thinking about your life as a kid, what did you imagine for yourself? Did you have any kind of a plan early on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, not much. I wanted to be successful, but I alternatively imagined various successes. When I was in high school, I thought maybe I'd be a teacher.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd be a high school teacher or a college teacher. And people said a college teacher is better. But I was not a good student, especially a lousy graduate student. So I sank to journalism.
Why do you figure you weren't a good student?
I couldn't write. I didn't write stuff. At the University of Chicago, when I was trying to write my master's thesis, I went to a psychiatrist. He was a Freudian. They made them available for free.
Right.
And I went to this. His name was Dr. Schwartz, and he smoked a pipe. I lay on a couch, and he smoked a pipe, and he never said anything. He was actually a resident. He would he would nod curtly, and I would begin and talk for an hour, or actually 50 minutes. And he
right.
would say, "Our time is up, Mr. Decker," and I went because I was unable to write. I'll even try the story. I was coming out of the library with my notes under my arm, and they were huge.
Now this is in Chicago, the University
of Chicago.
Yep.
And I passed a guy. He said, "What's that?" And I said, "They're my notes." He said, "That's just huge." And I said, "It's a huge pile of." What I can't say on the radio. Okay, so I told that to Dr. Schwartz. He said, "When I was in an undergraduate, down the dorm, come look. And we went into the men's room, and there in the toilet was the biggest, we can't say on the radio. He said, "Mr. Decker, we must learn to be proud of our," what you can't say on the
radio. Wow.
Now, how more Freudian than that can you get?
No more Freudian than that. I had actually heard, though, a friend of yours says, in some ways, you may not have finished your dissertation in part because you were too busy playing chess.
I played a lot of chess at the University of Chicago. I was chess champion of the University of Chicago one year.
I know you still play chess. What do you like about chess?
The world goes away.
Really?
All there is the board and the game. It's like getting drunk or getting high or something. Mm. The world doesn't to forget about today until tomorrow.
So I promise not to psychoanalyze you too much, but I don't have a pipe. What is appealing about that idea of the world going away for a time?
Sometimes the world gives me a hard time.
Yeah.
And I'm,
in what way? What do you mean?
I have to do stuff I don't want to do. Things don't always work out. Sometimes people have bad opinions of me. Mostly I have to do things I don't want to do.
So, but that's all the ordinary stuff. Is there the depression and the anxiety?
I am subject to depression.
Yeah.
Not too bad, but subject to depression. And that's one of the reasons I worry about retirement. When I got depressed before, if I got a good story, it pulled me out.
Yeah.
Now without a good story, I don't know what's going to pull me out.
What is it about political science that you liked? It seems you really took to that in undergrad when you were at the U. Is that right?
Yeah. I got an undergraduate degree in political science, and I don't know for sure. I was a Mormon and went to the Federal Heights ward, and there my Sunday school teacher was Bob Bennett, who later became a senator.
Wow.
And another teacher was his name was I. Daniel Stewart. He became Justice of the on the Utah Supreme Court, and there were others like them, and they were sort of political science-y guys, and I thought I'd like to be like that. That was probably what got me into political science, and it was I wouldn't work in college, so engineering or math or serious subjects were out.
Yeah.
But I could do political science fairly easily.
There's a political science professor for years at the University of Utah, J.D. Williams.
He and I were good friends.
Yeah. Did he teach you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Much of an effect on your outlook?
Yeah. Well, the J.D. Williams' big thing was he was such a good person, yeah. Such a nice man. But I took an honors class from him, and he had us write papers, and I could write his papers, and it was good for me.
Your father, Webster Decker, was an accounting professor at the University of Utah.
Right.
I read somewhere that he was a good dancer.
Oh, he was a wonderful ballroom dancer. He and my mom could dance. They didn't dance very much. They went to BYU back in the 20s when dancing was what people did.
Yeah.
At BYU, late 20s, early 30s, dancing was what people did. And and they danced. We went on a vacation once. We drove to California, and we stopped overnight in Las Vegas. And at the Riviera Hotel, by the pool, there was a band. And local guys came, and they were like dancing with the stars. I mean, they were good.
Right.
And my parents went out, and they danced as well as any of them.
Your father and your mother, I guess they had certain expectations for you. And some of them are related to your relationship with Mormonism, I guess. There's a story I want you to tell of your father basically taking you to Brigham Young University and enrolling you there. It didn't work out very well, but tell the story.
Okay. When I went to the University of Utah, I became a member of Pi Kappa Alpha, and I really, really liked that. I was 18, and I learned to drink beer, and I drank a lot of it.
Right.
And I was a poker player, and I was good at poker.
Yeah.
And so I spent my time, and I didn't go to class. And it wasn't so bad until the second quarter, we had quarters then, of my sophomore year, when I scheduled a number of classes at the same time, all the better to conserve my valuable time. And when I would cut, it wasn't one class, it was two or three. So I came home at 2 or 3 after the bars closed, night after night. My dad said, "I'm going to get you up at 7 o'clock in the morning." He got me up at 7, and I went up and slept on the couch at the Pi Kappa house. He then one night I came home and he said, "I'll get you up at 7, but he didn't get me up till about 10 or 11. He had checked me out of the University of Utah, put me in the car, took me down to Brigham Young University, and enrolled me in Brigham Young University. It started out okay. I didn't mind.
Really?
Yeah. But then towards the end, I started taking long weekends, Thursday to Tuesday, and staying at the Pi Kappa house and drinking beer. So it didn't work out. I more or less flunked out. You can't flunk out in a semester.
Yeah.
But I may have only actually flunked one class, but the standards weren't too high in those days. But I just limped through Brigham Young University, and that was sort of – people wondered if I could get through college.
Yeah. Did your father at some point he must have just – your parents must have just sort of conceded that Rod is not going to be a faithful member of the LDS Church.
My dad wasn't much of a Mormon. My mom was a serious Mormon, and she felt very bad about that.
You were faithful, you've said, until you were about 18.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that? Did you believe the story of Mormons?
I believed, at some point anyway. Maybe at some point I believed. And then when I went to the U, I became a fraternity boy. And
everything went out the window.
Yeah. And I left the church. What I said to myself was, it isn't true.
Yeah.
And it was on the basis of a rigid and ascetic adherence to truth. But I no longer much believe in truth. So that was what I said to myself.
But that's the way you were thinking then.
Yeah.
What do you mean you no longer believe in this general idea of truth? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that truth is an interpretation, and that the truth is hard. Truth is for God. People don't know the truth. No one.
Did you believe in God?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did. Don't.
Don't now?
Yeah.
Or aren't sure?
Well, I don't know. I've never actually looked.
Right. When you were 18 or whatever it is, and your Mormon church leaders wanted you to become an elder.
Yeah.
Which is, for those uninitiated, a higher rank of the Mormon priesthood.
Yeah.
You told them no.
Right.
How did that work? Not just their reaction, but what intellectually made you was this some kind of declaration that this is not for me, guys?
No. It was I didn't want to get talked into going on a mission.
Yeah.
And I thought, I know how to do this. I'll erect a wall before. I won't become an elder. Then they can't send me on a mission.
Mm. Why didn't you want to go on a mission?
Because I didn't believe in the church and didn't want to be a Mormon.
Yeah.
Throughout much of that period, I didn't know whether the decision was final. I thought it was, but I didn't know. I thought maybe I'll change my mind at some time.
Right.
And it was a long process. May not be over yet, but of sort of leaving. But I knew then I didn't want to go on a mission, and I didn't. That was a way of getting out.
You know, we had a conversation with R. Dean Watts a couple of years ago, and he talked about this moment of epiphany when he knew he didn't believe in the LDS Church anymore. It was something that came to him. It was powerful and was this transcendent idea.
Like the gift of the Holy Ghost is supposed to be for believers.
Exactly. You didn't have anything like that.
No. No. It was gradual and long and painful. Not horribly painful, but uncomfortable.
What do you mean uncomfortable?
Well, I didn't like it. I didn't know. Sometimes I didn't feel good about myself in or feel good about myself out.
Hmm.
Didn't know quite what I wanted to do. My life. I think leaving the church had to do partly with the fact that I drank beer instead of going to college, or did both at once, but the former more than the latter, and so I felt like, well, I'm not progressing in life, though I got through. I got a degree. I got a commission in the Army. Yeah. I got into graduate school. I got through, but I didn't do very well.
But it seems to me like, this is, I think, what a lot of active Mormons think, why people leave Mormonism is because they want to drink beer and sleep in.
I'm sure that's why a lot do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that's not why you left. I mean, intellectually, you couldn't square it with what you really believed.
Well, I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know whether I drank beer and then said, aha, this isn't true, or whether – now, I know that I drank beer before I said, aha, this isn't true.
Right.
But I don't know whether – I honestly don't know which came first.
You know, it's – you have a kind of abiding respect for Mormons, of course. I mean, I guess that goes without saying. But you've said also that Mormonism's strengths and weaknesses seem to be exactly the same.
Okay. Say politics. Mormons are conservative, and the leadership of the church is sometimes out of step with the progressive advance of America. Well, that's a weakness, but it's also a strength. What good would Mormonism be if it said the same thing as the progressive leadership of America.
Yeah.
It says different things, and sometimes some of what it says isn't so good, and sometimes what it says is good. But it's different, and I think that's good.
It's Rod Decker, who these days is retired after 37 years from KUTV Channel 2. He's working on a book called Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, a conversation with Rod Decker, which we recorded yesterday, only a few hours into his retirement. He spent 37 years in TV news. He was thinking about this new chapter in his life, and he said he was worried. So we talked about why, as well as his observations about church and state in Utah. It was hard for me to kind of peg where you are politically. And I won't try to define you, but I want to ask you about something in Vietnam. You served in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And one of the things you've said is the way Vietnam formed me was that it made me skeptical. Skeptical of liberals, skeptical of academics, skeptical of what you called the kind of perceived opinion at the time.
That's right.
You went to Vietnam a dove, you said.
Yeah.
Came back a hawk.
Right.
Explain that.
Well, it's just that. I went and I studied Vietnamese and hung out as much as I could with Vietnamese. And I believed that most of the things anti-war people said weren't true or weren't true the way they said them to be true. And I believed that most South Vietnamese didn't want to be communists. They didn't want to be taken over by the North, and that we had committed to them, and that we should keep our commitment. That's what I believed.
Do you remember when that came to you, when you were there in Vietnam?
Gradually.
Yeah.
I was surprised when I was an intelligence officer. And now you begin to understand why we lost that war. The intelligence, not that it was any good, but surprised me at first by the extent, by how clear it was that the war was simply being run from the North, that it was not an indigenous thing, at least not by then. There may have been something indigenous before the Tet Offensive. And that surprised me. And then the South Vietnamese I talked to surprised me. They were clearly, sincerely, didn't want to be communists. And I thought, well, we've committed to these people, and if we leave, they're likely in big trouble.
So do you think that is a characteristic of your attitude even now, or even as a reporter, a kind of skepticism, as you put it, not cynicism, but wanting to question the received wisdom, wanting to question the conventional idea?
Maybe some.
Yeah.
Maybe some. The conventional idea is always, for everybody, the conventional idea is not their idea. The conventional idea is the idea. If you're a liberal, then the conventional idea is the free market and America must be strong and things are good in America.
Yeah.
You believe those are ideas that need to be questioned. And if you're a conservative, you question other ideas. I guess I'm the same as that. The news media seem to me are very capable of being fooled as a group, that the certain assumptions become current among reporters, editors, and so forth, and the stories follow those, and they don't get outside them. Very hard to get outside them.
We kind of have like a hive mind mentality.
Yeah. And I believe that's what happened in Vietnam.
Really?
I'm sure it still happens. I'm in the news media now, and it's harder to see the hive mind.
Do you think, I'm not sure if you make the same connection with the trying to explain the election of Donald Trump, the media misperceiving and completely neglecting an entire section of the country that may have certain concerns, certain ideas that we didn't really take into account? Is that part of that?
I don't understand why Donald Trump got elected. And I didn't think he was going to get elected.
Yeah.
And I didn't want him to get elected. But I don't think it is now said, and I think you were hinting at it, that losers elected Trump, that people who have seen their status and their incomes fall relatively elected Trump. Well, there aren't enough of those people to elect Trump. A majority of white women voted for Trump. I think that it's more complicated than that. But I don't know what it is.
How do you explain Utah's support for Donald Trump?
Well, it was sort of support.
Sort of support. But I mean, the same question you could ask about evangelicals in the South. I mean, they have a high inclination for morality, and you could say Donald Trump, having various wives and a different kind of morality, didn't match the evangelical sensibilities or Mormon sensibilities.
And the Mormons changed. In the previous 11 presidential elections, Utah was first in 7 of them. And over those previous 11, Utah Mormons, 76% of their vote went to the Republican.
Yeah.
47% of the Utah Mormon vote went to Trump. Now, they voted for 32% went to Evan McMullen.
Right.
Who was a moral non-Hillary, and Utah, instead of being the most Republican, was the least Republican of all states that went Republican. So Mormons held it against him some. If it would have been Mormons, Trump would have won 47% to 32%.
You've written about the history of Utah politics. You have described the influence of the LDS Church this way: as probably the most powerful single interest in the politics of any American state.
Mm.
Do you still feel that way?
Well, they're certainly a contender.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would depend on how you count. Gambling, is gambling stronger in Nevada? Might be. I don't know, but I guess Boeing may at one time have been a contender in Washington. Certainly no more. But I don't know. It's hard to find an interest that you'd call an interest that is as powerful.
At some point, there was this divide that solidified. Mormons started to vote Republican. Non-Mormons started to vote Democratic. You've written about this. You peg it to around the mid-70s.
Yeah.
What happened?
Roe v. Wade. But that was that. That's just the leading case. America changed. America changed in families and sexual morality. People started having sex outside marriage, which was less common before. It started after World War II. People had fewer babies. They married later. They had a big change, more babies out of marriage. 40% of all the babies in America now are outside marriage, half that in Utah. And Mormons object to that. They have a hard time with pornography, with abortion, with birth control for teens without telling their parents, with gay marriage. They have all of those things they see as hard on the nuclear family, and it turns out it has been. That or something else has been hard on the nuclear family. Nuclear families are declining in America, declining less in Utah. Utah's the state where a child is most likely to live with two biological parents, and evidently that's good for kids.
What do you see? One of the things you've written is that Utah resists family change. You say Utah is a demographic follower. It moves in the same direction as the other states while trailing behind. Eventually we'll get there. So where is
Utah?
Well,
we don't know eventually we'll get there. We move in the direction of the other states while trailing behind. Births out of wedlock rise fast in Utah. Marriage age rises in Utah. The number of children decline in Utah. In all of the things, we're like America was 30 or 40 years ago, or 20, depending on the indicator, and we move in that direction. Now, America, families may have stopped declining in America. The trend may have stopped. The trend in out of wedlock births has leveled off in America, and in Utah. So that it was up steadily since 60. So that may have, you don't know the future, but Utah adheres to traditional families and to traditional sexual morality more than the rest of America. And Utah Mormons vote the traditional morality and vote traditional families. They see traditional morality as connected to traditional families, something that social scientists question. They see that and they vote it.
Do you? Here's another thing that you've written. I wanted to get your sense of the over the time of your career, having covered politics in this state, the influence of the LDS Church on the political process. One of the things you said is through the church politics less than it used to. It's potentially stronger in Utah than it has been for 80 years or more.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We're potentially more effective. From statehood until about the mid-70s, Utah was politically ordinary, a politically mainstream state. There were 20 presidential elections. Utah voted for the winner in 17 of them. Only three states voted for more winners. Frank Jonas, professor of political science at the University of Utah, said, "As the nation goes, so goes Utah," and we were part of the herd. That changed in 76 when we were the state that voted most for Gerald Ford, and then in 7 of the next 11 we were the most Republican. And what changed was Utah Mormons. Utah Mormons are the most Republican crowd in America. More Republican than rich people. More Republican than evangelicals. Utah Mormons. Mormons aren't as Republican as academics are Democratic, but they're pretty Republican, about 3-1.
And you don't see that shifting.
No. No, I think they are Republicans because they believe in traditional families. The church preaches traditional families. Mormons live in traditional families. Mormons became Republicans when traditional family morality was rejected by America and then by the courts. And so long as that goes on, then I think they'll stay Republican. That everything changes, and that will eventually change.
I heard you once say that you, in regards to same-sex marriage, that you supported same-sex marriage, but you wished the courts weren't the ones to make the call, at least when they
Yeah. I think we'd be much better off if the courts made less policy.
See, this makes you sound like a conservative.
Yes, it does. I think we'd be better off. Well, okay, conservatives are against the courts because the courts have been liberal. If Donald Trump gets a couple of more appointments, conservatives might come to see the wisdom of a
federal judiciary.
Yeah. and liberals might become more critical.
But Rod, where do you peg your politics? Because I hear you sounding liberal at times.
I'm a conservative.
You're conservative.
Yeah.
Well, like fashioned after who, could you say?
I don't know.
Really?
No, I don't have a model. I think that America would do better, and I'm pretty sure Utah would do better if the federal government made fewer decisions. I think that's sort of my conservatism there.
And it's kind of a Buckley conservatism, no?
I don't. I haven't. But what I've read of Buckley's is novels where his hero goes to bed with the Queen of England.
Right. I wanted to ask you about your stint at the Deseret News. This was early in your journalism career. You said that I always felt like I was never doing honest journalism in those days. You were writing editorials. What do you mean by that?
Well, okay, that's too strong.
You said this.
Okay, but that—
You were too strong then. I take it back?
That's too strong. Okay. I take it back.
Okay.
The Deseret News then was much more under the influence of the church than it is now.
Yeah.
And there were things we couldn't write about and couldn't do. I got in trouble for writing about Planned Parenthood, and I wrote a pro Planned Parenthood piece. Back then, Planned Parenthood was, I guess they've been controversial lately, but that's national. They were controversial here because they gave birth control to teens without telling their parents. And I wrote a pro-Planned Parenthood piece and got in trouble for that. And I got in trouble for criticizing the gas utility. And I forgot the name of it, but I'll remember. Mountain Fuel Supply. Yeah. I got in trouble for criticizing Mountain Fuel Supply over— – and that was honest reporting. That was just— – but the I got in trouble for that. And they believed— – and they were right. They had to stay on the side of the brethren, and it didn't affect everything, but it affected quite a few things.
Yeah, you're glad to be gone from there when KUTV hired you?
Yeah, worried about it, but yeah, KUTV was a very good thing for me.
Yeah, it surely was.
I've been really happy at KUTV.
What makes you good at what you do? Do you think?
Well, I don't know. I like it. I like being on TV, and I like doing stories, and I like reporting on politics. I really like it. That's probably the big thing. I've got a loud voice. I'm shameless. That may be too strong, but I have little shame, and I like politics.
Do you have a photographic memory?
No.
You have a pretty good memory. Everyone I've talked to about you who knows you says it's kind of remarkable.
Well, okay. It's going away.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm getting old and my memory is going away. I still remember, as old people do, I still remember things I learned a long time ago. But it's hard for me to remember things that I learned recently.
I've heard you quote poetry from time to time. Philip Larkin.
He's my favorite.
Is he?
Yeah.
Why?
He seems to be honest and okay. He's a curmudgeonly old white guy, and he's dead now. But he's a curmudgeonly old white guy, and he writes straight, honestly as a curmudgeonly old white guy.
And that appeals to you, why?
Yes. And besides that, he's technically beautiful.
It's beautiful. You can say the F word if you want to quote the F you up, mom, your mom and dad.
I can say that.
Yeah, I mean we're going to bleep.
Okay,
it,
I'll
but.
Quote. Okay, well then I'll quote another. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Okay. This is Larkin. Okay. Sexual intercourse began in 1963, which was rather late for me, between the end of the Chatterley Band and the Beatles' first LP. Up till then, there'd only been a sort of bargaining, a wrangle for a ring, a shame that started at 16 and spread to everything. Suddenly, the quarrel sank. Everyone felt the same. Every life became a brilliant breaking of the bank, a quite unlosable game. So life was never better than in 1963, though just too late for me, between the end of the Chatterley Band and the Beatles' first LP.
There's a one of my favorite lines in from Larkin comes at that last line of an Arendelle tomb.
Yeah.
Almost
what is
instinct?
Left of us, what will be left of us is love. Yeah.
What will survive of us
is
love.
Yeah. Okay.
More sentimental than Larkin is sometimes.
Larkin's at his best when he's bilious.
Yeah.
He's good when he's curmudgeonly. That Arendelle tomb is a very nice poem, but he's so nice in it.
It's out of character.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he was nice sometimes, but his best poems are sort of an angry old man poem or a wistful, a sad old man poem. Those are his best poems. My opinion.
I wanted to ask you about what you're going to do now. Before I get there, though, do you watch much television? Do you watch TV?
No, don't. Television is for being on, not for looking at.
But I've heard you say that. But what do you mean by that? You actually agree with that.
Yeah, I don't look at much TV. Don't intend to.
You read a lot?
Read quite a bit, yeah.
Still play chess?
Less than I used to.
Really?
Chess is a vice with me. Chess is a way of avoiding my duties.
How's your wife?
She's doing pretty well. She's doing very well. She's got pancreatic cancer, and it's still there. And most people, very few people survive as long as she's survived, and she's doing fine. She's active, and she does a lot of stuff and feels good. Don't know how long it'll last.
Yeah. Part of the retirement was part of the retirement to spend time with her?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather spend time with her than at the station.
One of the things you've said was that you are hoping in retirement is that you want to learn to be a better person.
I did say that, and it's true.
What do you mean?
I want to drink less, and I want to do the administrative details of life better, and I want to be nicer to people, some people, and I want to be a better person. I want to be able to write, and not able to write so that I don't suffer too much and end up misbehaving before I write.
So what's the plan today?
Okay, today I've been to the library. Yeah. I went to the library, and I'm working on an article, which if it works, I'll submit to the Utah Historical Quarterly on freight rates in Utah. The railroads used to charge a lot more for shipping something from Missouri to Utah than for shipping the same thing from Missouri to San Francisco. And they used to charge more to ship out of Utah. And I'm going to try to do an article about that for UHQ. And I went and learned how to use the computer to find old newspapers. Learned, I'm not very good at it, but I didn't even know that the computer had them until this morning. And I've looked up some articles, and I'm started. Then I had to come here.
So you're hopeful. This might go well.
Yes, I'm hopeful that I'll write stuff and spend time with my wife and see people and become a better person. That's very hopeful.
It's Rod Decker, who has just retired after 37 years covering Utah and politics at KUTV Channel 2. These days, he's working on a book called Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room. Radio West is a production of KUER News. The show was directed by Michael Havey. Our films are produced by Kelsey Moore. Radio West is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.